from Ocala, Florida, the Ocala Breeders Sales Company. It's the start of the two-year-old and training sale season. It's the season you wait for, well, not all year, but all winter. It's time to start selling babies, and hope springs eternal. Spring being the operative word, and spring can't come soon enough because, I'll tell you, even here, same thing. Get here. I had Hertz Gold. You could pick whatever car, and I said, you know what? 2 weeks in Florida, there it was, a Camaro convertible. I think I'm going to take this convertible. Not yet. It's not convertible weather yet. Jimmy Ventura joins us. There's two Venturas today. You need a program. You need a catalog. This is Jimmy out of by Giuseppe Ventura.
No, Nunzio D. Nunzio D. out of Norma Ventura.
Yeah. A full to Tommy Ventura.
Yeah.
Jimmy,
it's the first time I've been back down here for about 5 years, and everything continues to grow.
Oh, the
facility, too, they've been building out, and they've done a really good job here. And the good thing is I get to stay at Tommy's house, and my sister-in-law cooks for me. So it can't beat that. Can't beat that.
Well, if Hammer's listening, it's early for Hammer. It's 6 o'clock, but he'll get a kick out of you filling in his role as co-host, at least to get started here for the next 3 days. And I started to tell you about coming down. I just saw Richard Kent earlier. I've already seen in the first hour sitting here. We're in the lobby at OBS. Sale starts at 11. When I first looked this up, the dates were Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And so then about, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I was telling Richard Kent, I said, all of a sudden I looked at, I don't know what I was doing, but I saw, oh, wait a minute, they got it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we're not wading into the action. There's been, of course, the buyers on the grounds since the Breeze Show wrapped up. Very few outs, actually, 149 outs. And this thick catalog, the third day, an extra day, for the March sale, we'll talk to Todd Wojciechowski about it. Tom will join us probably a little before the sale gets started at 11. But the hiatus status of the Fasig Tipton,
yep,
Florida sale, there's Brendan Walsh powering through the, there he goes. The abandonment, or not abandonment, but at least for now, no Florida sale.
Right.
And so this becomes a focus. And we talked to Tom when he announced last fall that when that came to be, that there would be a third day added,
right,
to this sale. So this will give outfits a running start.
They had 4 days of the Breeze Show,
right,
last week. And it went smoothly, and now you're leading into the 3-day sale. Gave all the clockers and the people that wanted to watch the Breeze Show ample time to take their notes and go back to the barn. And Saturday and Sunday was filled in the back area with people looking at horses, and a lot of buyers seemed to be here, and they're all geared up. So it's always an exciting part, like you said. It's springtime. The babies are gearing up, and there's a lot of action going on the backside.
We'll talk about any number of the, particularly the first crop sires. It's always a big focus. At this time of year, it's the focus in the fall for the yearling sales. And for those that didn't keep close tabs or haven't looked at a catalog or checked into a preview of the sale, you're going to see the first 2-year-olds this season and through the ring today from Audible, Catalina Cruiser, Catholic Boy. These are some of the
Matoli.
Big ones. Matoli, Enticed, Flame, yep, Away. Flame Away, a horse that, as a Scat Daddy son, that was a horse that we talked a lot about last fall during the yearling sale, that he was giving off little smoke signals of being a smoldering potential. And it's interesting because, just being a Scat Daddy anyway,
sure,
with all the Justify and everything else that goes along with Sons of Scat Daddy.
No Nay Never.
And No Nay Never, and go on and on. Leah Frick is got his first babies. How about Vino Rosso, World of Trouble, Yoshita, all with their first babies. New York, Soleimani is represented. And
it was a New York bred, I think, that Top Line had. Homebred, maybe.
There you go. Omaha Beach. Did we mention Omaha Beach?
Did not, and I know that a lot of the consigners were pretty high on him.
Absolutely. Made sense, and strong sales as yearling. And then some of the, you know, some of the smaller offerings in terms of, you know, smatterings. How about the Preservationist has got seven in here. DeMarchelier. DeMarchelier. And
yep.
I bet he takes a good picture. Yeah, yeah. Copper Bullet has got four in this catalog, and some single. There's a couple of single entities. Kurban, Lost Treasure has got one, and St. Patrick's Day, the American Pharoe brother, nine.
Yeah,
in here.
There were a few of those out there, and they look pretty good on the racetrack.
Well, that'll be, you know, that's all. It's always a question I ask, you know, any of the evaluators, you know, who do you like and who, you know, who's have, most notably, because, of course, unless for sales, or, you know, if you go visit your babies down at, you know, we've had, it's funny, we had a lot of, over the last 2 months since the start of the year, several, you know, visitors, successful trainers from the weekend when we do some recapping,
sure.
And they say, oh, we're down in, you know, we're down in Ocala, we're down, you know, we're wherever we are, South Carolina, you know, visiting and taking a look at the babies to see how they've developed in the, you know, in the over the winter and how they're growing, because they change so quickly, and that's a big part of what, you know, what we're going to see.
I think Maximus Mischief is also...
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely.
As a first time,
he's got 24 in this catalog.
Got quite a few.
And here's somebody who's completely familiar with the catalog. You can say, you know,
okay.
Stick mic is good. And happy to welcome Todd Wojciechowski.
Thank you.
Well, hold on. There we go.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're going to roll right into this, aren't we?
Right,
this
roll
is
right on.
Right?
I'm ready.
Well, and it seems like the consigners are ready, obviously. The buyers certainly seem ready. Todd, give us kind of the early read on you know, what is now an expanded March sale here at OBS.
Well, I think it's, as you walk around the sales grounds the last few days for us, there's been quite a bit of juice in the air. It feels good. It feels good. And, you know, so many times we use... different metrics to measure things at the sales, but sometimes you just have to rely on the old gut. And when you walk around, it feels good. So,
in terms of, and here's somebody who can tell us. Look at him! Look at him waving us off. so good. There's obviously two things that got to be brought in. That little bit of a financial, little bit of a, you know, international banking and
right.
And
right.
You know, financial. We won't call it a meltdown, obviously, but you know, certainly a rippling. Jimmy and I are actually talking about it. Of course, Jimmy's in real estate.
Sure.
What concern does that, because market conditions are always a
big
part of this.
It would be silly to say we're not concerned about it at all. Obviously, you know, we're trying to pay attention to the things that go on, but certainly there have been other times, probably in recent history, that financially things were not always going as great in the economy as we would like, and yet the market roared along. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, as I said, I'm reading the tea leaves as I see them here on the grounds, and there has been a lot of interest, you know, not just domestically, but internationally here over the last 3 or 4 days.
Excellent. And when it comes to the expanded, you know, the expansion of the sale and the third day, we were just touching on that, how the hiatus status of the Florida sale at Gulfstream, the old Calder sale, that it basically opened the door for this to be even a more robust event.
Yes, to some degree. I mean, let's keep it in perspective. That was really only about a 100-horse sale.
Right.
So, you know, those horses probably have been spread out between March, April, and perhaps even June. The growth of this sale to by 200 head this year really is something that happened organically. It wasn't something that we had planned. It wasn't by some great design. It just worked out that we had a lot of entries for this sale and a lot of quality horses that wanted to be in March.
Well, and then, of course, it's a matter of which horses go into training and the pinhook conditions. One thing that seems very apparent, if you utilize the TDN pinhook,
right?
Listing
the averages,
the pinhook guide, as they call it. Each day they will list, and we got about 200 plus head today, 220 or so. And you just look at the numbers and the six-digit sellers. And we discussed it all through Keeneland, how the pinhookers, the pressure was on them, the push down effect of the voracious appetite of certainly the stallion making operations, whether it's the Liz Crow elite group with Brad Cox, whether it's Tom Ryan and the SF Avengers team, and then there's Viola and Rapoli. Mm-hmm. I mean, buying 60 yearlings, it puts a big pressure on the on the pinhook types, in terms of having to go further and further down catalogs and reach deeper in their pocket. The competition, book three, book four, got intense.
Sure. All of those things that you mentioned have an effect, and add to the fact that over the years the number of people that are pinhooking horses have increased. There's quite a bit of competition within the pinhooking world, and over the last few years we've seen a decline in the foal crop, and people kept saying why. Intuitively one might have said that we should see lesser horses in the two-year-old catalog, and my response was, well, there may be less horses being bred, but there's not less pinhookers, and they need inventory to sell. And as the number of pinhookers increase, the size of the catalogs are going to increase.
Well, Jimmy, jump in on this too, because you've bred to sell, and you've also ended up racing some that way. You also, will actively buy a horse. If horses are selling at these tremendous, every sale seems to exceed previous year's numbers, and even if we use 2008 as a restart. So the last 15 years, why are more mares not going into production? And why are we not getting the foal crop? I mean, I know it's slowed the diminishing of the foal crop numbers. If there's a market and the conditions are strong to buy and sell horses, then why? There's Mark Hennig, who won two races Saturday, including with Ouster, with a triple-digit buyer. why are there not more babies? Why is there not more of an active growth in breeding?
Well, maybe the affinity for the pinhooking part, perhaps the affinity for the pinhooking part is you get to choose which one. When you breed, you don't get to pick what that baby looks like.
Yeah, God is your partner. Well,
Aaron Yagoda famously says,
"You get what you get."
Yeah,
and that is a much longer term process.
Yes. Yeah.
We are in an era, in a world that bigger, better, more now.
Day trading started a while back, and then flipping real estate, flipping houses, and so flipping horses, and it's the immediate gratification maybe of the versus the long term hold of the breed, and then seeing what you get. Do you pay a premium?
Right, the breed, breed the best of the best, and hope for the best is not necessarily hope. Isn't a plan, is what I was told by someone.
Yeah,
that's a great line, actually.
Yeah. Yep.
We should put somebody's name on that.
I'm trying to remember. That
belongs.
It probably came from a movie.
That belongs on an embroidered pillow somewhere. Yeah. Hope is not a plan. I love it. Todd Wojcicki joining us, the sales director at OBS. Jimmy Ventura is here as well,
sitting in for Hammer.
Exactly. Hammer considered coming. He's coming to Gulfstream next week.
Yeah, for the Florida Derby.
We will see him Thursday and Friday downstate. Speaking of upstate and downstate, Todd, this town, this is, I mean, it's scary. I've only been coming maybe 6 years. It took me longer to drive here from Orlando than it took me to fly Albany to Orlando. The town is just out of control.
Well, you know, it doesn't, from the traffic standpoint, it doesn't help. We sit on right on the one of the two major arteries to run north and south into the state. Add to the number of people that have moved to Florida, and then add your horse people that have moved to Florida. It's been a tremendous influx of people over the last few years.
I mean, you have a pretty good idea from the housing stock and things, because your wife has a real estate.
My wife's in real estate market.
Oh, wow.
So, she has a company here.
Not only the horse business has grown in Ocala, a lot of distribution centers have been built here as far as getting away probably from Orlando or Jacksonville. Amazon,
wow.
Chewy, some of these different larger companies are using Ocala as a distribution hub.
Unbelievable. So everything. So there's a confluence of of events that and factors that have just. Then there's you talk about this. It's hard not to mention the World Equestrian Center that has created. The most.
Disney World for horses.
I guess. In fact, the first person I saw checking into the hotel yesterday afternoon was Al Stahl, and he was on his way to take a client who'd never been down here. He said, "I'm taking him over there. I got to show it to him."
Yeah, if you're in the horse world, and probably not even if you're in the horse world, but certainly if you're in the horse world, regardless of discipline, it is opulence like no other for horses.
Yeah, no, it's pretty spectacular. We went there to dinner. The other night, I forget the name of the restaurant, they're upscale, but it was gorgeous, overlooking their arena, pretty opulent.
Well, and it keeps expanding, and now condos and golf
course.
Yeah,
they're finishing up another hotel.
Another hotel?
Yeah.
Yes, they're building another
hotel. The first
one
wasn't enough.
No. There's one out closer to 80th Avenue, that a larger hotel. And they're also building a medical center there, a human medical center. Yeah. Not only do they have an equine medical center there, but they're also building a human medical center there.
Unbelievable. And well, for those that, when you come down here, you've got to at least drive through. It's just unbelievable. I mean, starting with the stadium, and then there must be another eight show rings that are scattered around. They were working last year on the equestrian course, the cross-country course,
right.
And the
right.
back over the Hill and Dale. There's, if you're not staying in the hotel, there's the RV park, and I'm not talking about pop-up tents.
No.
they've got tractor trailer sized mobile homes.
And they have a lot of non-horse events there too.
Yeah.
Big dog events, right? Don't they have
a few dog events? They had a home expo there a couple weeks ago. They have a couple of expo centers.
Well, there's for those of you that know the reference, Seattle and Anuga. Or the McCormick Center in Chicago. I mean, there must be five exposition warehouse-sized, show centers. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. No. I mean, it is a tremendous. You can't describe it well enough.
No.
Something
no.
A description just doesn't do it justice.
No, you got to go and you got to drive through. So let's do a drive through. I brought up some of the names, Todd, that particularly the freshman sires. It's always a big part of any sales season, and you've got some big names, and then of course you've also got plenty of stallion power. In terms of existing
Into Mischief and
Uncle Mo, Curlin, Justify, etc.
Yep.
And, of course...
It's interesting. It used to be years ago for the two-year-old sales, the connotation was the little speedy horse that would be ready early, and you would only see
right.
stallions like Premier Ship.
Unreal Zeal.
Unreal Zeal. Yeah. And now you've got the top 10 of whatever sire list you want to look at. The top 10 is represented at the two-year-old sales, and that's just been the evolution of the two-year-old sales, that from those type of horses that sellers were quick to realize the people were looking for derby horses, and so they buy a stretchy horse that can go fast.
Well, and that's funny, because particularly the Florida stallions that that caught fire quickly over the last decade. Cantheros, certainly, before going to, on to Hillendale. Cinco Charlie, right? Was it Cinco Charlie that, that popped up? And
Well, Gervin.
Gervin, Moshe
Rosales. You know, go back before that, you had Yes, It's True, you had Exchange Rate. I mean, those are...
That's right, Exchange Rate.
And now those horses, particularly Yes, It's True, is having a profound impact on broodmare sires, as a broodmare sire. So.
In terms of visits, or, you know, the, you know, I know, don't know if you spend as much time combing the, you know, combing the barns, but anything that, that jumped out at you that you've been impressed with?
Just the quantity of people that are here, number one. The activity in the barns has been tremendous the last few days. Even as I talked to the consigners, they said, hey, man, we've been covered up showing horses. The international trade is always kind of mind-boggling to me. Little old Sleepy Ocala is no longer
Little old
such.
Sleepy Ocala, right.
It's an international marketplace. The number of Jap, the number of European buyers, it really is remarkable to me and exciting to see. All of these cultures coming together and clashing.
Well, success breeds success too, right? So these horses, you've sold to those, you know, international countries and buyers in those places, and they've gone on to do exceptionally well,
right.
Wherever they happen to race.
Kudos to those guys that took the risk to come over the first time, and that have been rewarded with success at home. You know, one of the horses on our cover, Cafe Pharaoh, is American Pharaoh's leading money earner in the world.
Yep. It's on the cover of the catalog.
Japanese, from Japan. You know, the success that we've had in the Middle East with sale graduates, the success we've had in Europe. So all those successes, like Jimmy said, success begets success.
Yeah, take your time. You got it. Ned Doffy. Going to join us from Spendthrift.
Steve's like air traffic control from people walking by, and he's trying to wave them down. It's pretty impressive.
You have no idea. It's a
multitasker.
It's a constant, and especially because, you know, especially it's a little tricky. And I've got my new piece of equipment, which is a which will pick up Wi-Fi, and so there's potential at some point to go out into that lobby area.
Nice.
And do it from there, because you know there that would be a series of like buzz buys, you know, people just grab the mic, say hello, right. and go. But when you're in the lobby here, which is lovely, I love being here. It's a little different because you got everybody in the especially today. I thought you were going to be selling Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then I saw that.
We had to add it to Monday because what we didn't want to do, Wednesday was the final day originally, and we didn't want to affect people's travel plans. You know, people who already
they're already here.
Exit
yeah.
flight.
There
flights
you, oh,
out,
I got you.
Right?
I got you.
So we didn't want to have to blow that up. Plus, quite truthfully, we are right on top of the Dubai World Cup. If we would have stretched it a little further, it would affect those people that are trying to leave here and go to the Dubai World Cup. And we have buyers here that are
interesting,
you know, leaving to do that.
Hey, speaking of which, of course, the airport is right across the street. This mm-hmm. is OBS is the Keeneland of of Ocala.
2 year olds, right?
The way the planes you can fly right in,
right.
You can pop right out. I ask Tom this every year. Keep hearing rumblings about this becoming more of a commercial airport.
I think there is a desire by those in the city, Chamber of Economic Development or CEP, whatever. Though they are ones that kind of beat that drum. I happen to serve on the airport advisory board, so I can tell you that that's not imminent. There is growth to the airport. There will be private hangars that will be added on the other side of the airport. But as far as a commercial spot.
Probably not going to get a Delta flight direct in.
Not in a while. Well, because you got Gainesville so close.
Sure.
So.
How far is Gainesville?
35 minutes. from here.
Oh, interesting. All right, because I always come from Tampa or Orlando.
Yeah, I frequently if you know the great thing about Orlando or Tampa, you're usually direct into it. But if you're having to make a connecting flight somewhere, Gainesville is a great option. Typically, you're going to go through Atlanta through Delta. Also, American does through Charlotte.
All right. Got to ask, speaking about regional airports and regional travel, in terms of the offerings, in terms of state bread, what's the in terms of the three sales, what's the best to come here for if you're picking up, if you want to pick up a regional bread? Is it April or June?
I don't know that it's sales. That is sales specific. You know, the way that our sales are set up is horses that are ready early. That's the March type of horse you want to be selling. If he needs a little bit of time, you go to April, and if he needs a little more time than that, you can go to June. So the state bred programs. I know we sell a number of New York breds and other states. New York pops to mind because we have. As a matter of fact, I've had a breeder that sells down here, and they say they like to sell here because they're more likely to end up in New York from Florida than they are in some other sales.
So, right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think percentages across the board, and you would know better than I would, but I think percentages are probably the same almost across the board.
Per sale, yes.
Right? Per sale. Mm-hmm. So the majority is probably Kentucky, and then...
Sure.
And then
that's the largest, you know.
Correct.
Largest population, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm just looking. Yeah, obviously Kentucky and Florida, 1-2, and then New York.
Sure.
Handful of Maryland breads, 6, 7, 8 Pennsylvania breads. Yeah, handful of California breads. But predominantly Kentucky and Florida. The biggest for you, Todd, and for people that want to get involved in terms of people, I suppose this is a way to monitor potential sale numbers or anticipate how busy a sale might be. People asking for credit, people applying for credit.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that's one metric we certainly monitor. And we've been very happy with the responses we've seen over the last few weeks.
Interesting. In terms of new, what about new potential?
Yes.
New
yes.
names.
New names, international names.
Interesting.
And old names as well.
People coming back that have been away for a number of years?
A few, yes. Actually, a few people that, you know, maybe we haven't seen for a few years, but they're back in action.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
There's always a new shooter.
Yeah.
The new...
It's always remarkable how that happens.
There's always somebody that's like, you know, a big gun that steps in that, you know, it comes from nowhere, whether, you know, whoever it was the previous years, then they replaced or just added onto the pile.
We need...
New blood.
There's a handful of things that we're always in need of. We need more owners and we need more players. That's who we should be recruiting. I mean,
and the great thing
and
about
horses.
The one thing about the 2-year-old sales that I think is critical to that, as you said, let's get owners, and we need owners that are racing, right? We're one step closer to racing right here. We're only a half a step away.
Yep.
Right? Now we've seen them on the track. And I tell people all this all the time for the people that are considering buying a 2-year-old. Not only are you buying that horse's potential as a racehorse, you're also buying the expertise of the guys here in Ocala that have prepared that horse for his future job. And that's worth something. That's not something that's something different, unique, that you don't get in a yearling sale or, in a other age bracket sale.
I mean, really, the 2-year-old sales are a combine. An NFL combine. Instead of them having to throw and jump and run fast, we're looking at running and how they're handling it and the way that they do things and how they come back.
We've got a few of them that hand out Wonderlic tests at the barn. And
Yep, exactly. You know, so it's always important that these especially, when you're testing the 2-year-olds on the racetrack and how they come back, and watching them how they deal with it, that their mind could still handle all these things. So
on that front, I'm curious, Todd, over the years, and because I'm sure you watch with interest, one of the things that let's be honest, competitors in the sales arena have tried to differentiate themselves is the dirt, breezing on dirt versus sure. breezing on this synthetic track. And how do you answer that?
It's pretty easy for me to answer, actually. So the one thing that we have to keep in mind is there is no other sales company in the world, that breezes more horses over as many days as we do.
There you go.
Okay. So in order to try to provide a track that is safe and consistent,
right,
from day 1 to day 7, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., the synthetic is the only surface that can do that. If you have a dirt track and you're breezing over 7 days, one day it's going to be dry and loose. One day it's going to be wet and muddy. One day it's going to be a dry and out track. One day, so you have different conditions all the time. So not only the consistency that we get from the synthetic surface allows the consigner to show off his wares, it also gives the buyer a better opportunity to make comparisons from horses from day to day.
And I won't take thunder away from my brother, but Tommy runs stats every which way. And I don't know the exact number, but the majority, statistically, 60-some-odd percent.
Yeah, of the stakes, the graded stakes horses that's come out of March, 67% of them are dirt winners. Right.
Says a
which
lot.
Is the, which is a higher percentage than others.
Anyone.
Than
right.
Others.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, it would, for those that, and for the horses that end up as turf horses, you also get, a read how they might travel,
right.
which they're not going to breeze on a dirt track, they're not going to breeze notably, right. And so people that bring a turfish pedigree to a sale here, their potential right. buyers might get a better...
And ultimately, it's not about the track, it's about the horse. And the quality of horses that are going through the ring.
Well, the big names are here, and
Bobby B.
Well, he loves coming down here.
Yeah.
Todd, best of luck to everybody, and thanks as always for having us.
I always enjoy our conversations. It's great. You're very easy to do this with.
Well, let me get one more lick in because he reminded me.
Were you about the about college?
Yes.
No, I just asked
Cornell.
Him.
Cornell.
Yeah, it's Cornell.
It's Cornell.
Yeah. Yep.
Go Big
I
Red.
Thought, yeah, because I knew that Colgate. Yeah. I said, he might be Colgate.
Yes.
I forget.
I played football at Cornell, and our motto was, we may not be big, but we're slow.
you couldn't be happy with the Red Raiders over the weekend winning the ECAC, which was unbelievable Friday night and Saturday night, two best games they've ever played. By doing so, they actually pushed Cornell out of the NCAAs,
right?
With that, as it turns out, Quinnipiac and Harvard both still get their at-large bids, but the Maroon and honestly, the whatever happens Friday night against, they're playing Michigan because they come in as the 16th. Appropriately, they come in as the 16th seed in the NCAAs. Right. But this was as unbelievable. I mean, I broadcast Colgate hockey for 4 years. This was unbelievable. They hadn't won the ECAC in 33 years.
Wow.
That was at Boston Garden over RPI, and then they went and they lost the national championship to Wisconsin. But eight periods of hockey, they went to two overtimes against Quinnipiac before beating them, and then the game against Harvard was just spectacular. I mean, college hockey in a lot of ways is more fun than maybe
That was my first exposure to it when I went to Cornell. I grew up down here in Florida. So there was a lot of culture shock for me when I went to Cornell, but one of the coolest environments was the hockey rink for a home game for
Liner rink,
and all of the different chants and the different things that just kind of make you giggle. But Yeah, it was really cool.
What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 88.
88?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of who.
Kenny Gamble was a big player for you guys back at Colgate.
Before his career with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of who you might have been there. You're just a little behind me. Well, Todd, delighted to have you, and looking forward to the start of the season, the two-year-old sales season.
Absolutely.
Underway.
Great.
Thanks so much. Let me get a picture
absolutely.
With you and Jimmy.
Here with Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly. And so that way, and no, you can get in the. You're unbelievable. What are we going to do with you?
In the photo.
He's amazing.
Tom's going
to
get in.
Oh yeah, look at that. Oh, fantastic. Okay. There we go. Unbelievable.
It's all yours.
Sit down.
Bring him home.
Come on. You got a couple minutes?
Just a minute. Grab a mic. You don't have to say much. You just can smile, and we'll. I know. We'll tee you up, Tom. We'll put you on the big tee.
Too much fun. And the big question is, I texted him on my way here. Where's Yagoda? Why you? Where's your ace promoter?
I can't keep track of him. Yeah. Even though he's my best friend, his daughter's home from college, so. He wants to spend some time with her.
He has spent 19 years with her. We need Yagoda down here.
He's a great dad, though. That's what he wants. That's his priority. So,
Tom McGreevy joining us. And, Tom, always great to see you. You're a perfect segue. We've had the sales promoter here with Wojo. But how about an evaluator of talent in terms of some of the physicals? Who is matured nicely since the yearling season, and who you eyeballing if you don't mind revealing?
Oh, I can't tell you who I'm looking at. Jimmy's sitting right here next to me.
That's right.
Well,
that's
I mean,
we were looking together. Matter of fact, there are a lot of nice. I mean, to help him out, there were a lot of nice physicals that we went and looked at.
Oh yeah, there's 800 horses in a sale, and the people that select these horses and the people that buy them, they make a living doing that. So there's some good ones in here, and you just got to sort through them and see which one suits your preferences, what you're looking for. Because some people might be looking for a filly, some are looking for a colt, some are looking for a sprinter, you know, two turn horse. There's something here for everybody, I'm sure.
What? Who are you working exclusively the way you typically have, or are you doing some bird dogging?
No, actually, I'm working exclusively for Bobby Flay now, but he does not buy at the 2-year-old sales.
No.
So
he has the. With me being here,
I didn't realize that
it's the runt of the litter, so I get to follow along with Tom now, because I don't have the check writing ability of Bobby. From the last year, Bobby engaged Tom and bought some yearlings and mares.
Yeah, we went to Europe, to Newmarket twice.
Right.
Went to Arncona, bought a few. And he's been great to work with. I think we have a good rapport, and I think it's a really good fit, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, and of course, he's had, after a protracted period, and we haven't talked about it in the last couple of years. Maybe we did when he had the $2 million sellers.
Yeah.
But his production side, his broodmare side, is paying dividends after an extensive period of building things up and pruning. I mean, what parts of the operation are you specifically geared toward?
The thing I do is buy the horses, pick them out.
Well, because he
has other people. For instance, all those mares are at Stone Farm. They do a great job, and I know to stay in my lane, and my lane is going out looking for horses and trying to find the right ones to buy.
So he's kind of geared back toward buying again, because he had kind of pared back on that front, right?
Yeah, he's buying, he's breeding. I mean, Tom also looked at some mares as well.
Right, we're going down. I'm going down sometimes, in April. Yeah, a couple of weeks. And look at his mares and babies. He's got quite a impressive broodmare band at Stone Farm.
I call Bobby's operation Judmont Light. It's just not the quantity, but the quality of his mares. I've been fortunate enough to walk around with Tom, and when we went to the farms and did inspecting of the ones of the babies that Bobby bred, as well as picked out some that we purchased as yearling or weanlings. You know, it's impressive, and to have Tom to walk around with the Joey O, to walk around and see that. But Tom's kind of an integral part now of Bobby's poll process.
Very cool.
And so I've only started working for him in September, and you know, I was working for Breeze Easy, and that was really both those guys, Sam Ross, who has unfortunately passed away, you know, recently. Mike Hall, and they were great to work with, and you know, but they have cut back on their purchasing because you know Sam had passed away.
How long? I should know this, but how long over the years with Rick Porter?
Somebody asked me that yesterday. It's 15, 16 years.
They spent.
Yeah, and it was a great run.
I would say you had some success.
But you know,
he didn't buy Curlin, but he did buy Songbird.
Actually, we have two nominated for the
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame this year. So
Habit of Grace
and Songbird.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I forgot that she's.
This is her first year.
I forgot that she would year. Be that she'd if, be included.
My opinion, which is humble, if she didn't get in on the first ballot, you know, somebody's not looking at the right. I mean, she's won 9 Grade Ones, 7 different racetracks. It's just amazing what she's done.
It's funny because we've discussed this. Her resume is stronger. It's very strange. Her resume is stronger for Hall of Fame than Hop to Grace. The Hop to Grace is her and Rags to Riches. You know, the people. There may be people that just love them as racehorses. But if we're creating a standard, and Hop to Grace is such a weird. She's one of those horses that you know. She's okay. She was Horse of the Year, but it just doesn't. When you look at the resume, and you're like, she was great. She was really nice. But no, is she a Hall of Famer?
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
I'm asking the wrong guy. I understand that
because I know. You know, her you know, after she was Horse of the Year, she went back and she was going to make another run. She won her first race at Fairgrounds, I think, very impressive, and then she got hurt. So, and just with her, I don't think she had, like a lot of the horses are probably in the same category, didn't get their full share of what they can really do. Because when she beat the boys at Saratoga, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, what? No, there's no doubt.
So I think that pretty much showed, you know. And Songbird, you know, what can you say? I think one thing that's so interesting about Songbird, and I do once in a while, if somebody wants to look at something, get on YouTube, and there's a segment on there, and they just show the stretch runs of her wins. And it's not so much the runs, it's the commentary from the announcers. These announcers have been around for so long, and it's just so interesting to listen to their superlatives about this horse, of all the horses that they've seen. And she was probably the kindest horse I've been around too. A lot of these fillies, sometimes that are really the top of the class, they can get a little, you know, snippety or, you know, be tough to deal with. She was just the kindest horse she ever wanted to be around. She just wanted somebody to pet her and give her a carrot. And, you know, so she, you know, ran 14 times in 12 minutes. I think she had
15.
Pardon me?
I just pulled it up. 15.
15, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, with 13, 13 for 15.
2 seconds.
With
one was a nose in a Breeders' Cup, which is,
yep.
I don't know if you've ever seen that photo, but it's paper thin.
Let's talk about the photo. There's people who are convinced that she won. It's one of those.
Yogi and Jackie Robinson.
It's one of those great. One of those crazy debates that some people say, oh, she won. They miscalled the
well,
finish.
Well, I look at it. She didn't lose the race. She lost the photo.
Well, ooh, there you go. There you go.
Because I actually had a chance to talk to Gary Stevens the next day and ask him what his thoughts were on the race, and I thought it was very interesting what he had to say. That, you know, the 3/8 pole, he said it was exactly where he wanted to be. He was laying third behind, I forget, it was Larry Jones's horse, and Songbird was in front. He said, anyway, this filly was getting, you know, just enough to keep Songbird.
Chatterbox.
Chatterbox, right. To keep Songbird, you know, engaged. And he said, I knew when we turned for home, it was just going to be the two of us. And he said, behold her, when she turns for home and switches leads, she just spurts ahead. He said, so we turned for home, she changed leads, she spurted ahead, and I looked over and Songbird's still there. So he said, they were just going at it down the lane. And so about halfway down the lane, he figured, you know, this filly's never been in tight. I'm going to put her in tight, see how she likes that. He said, I put her in tight, said she just loved it. You know, just kept going. And he even said there shouldn't have been a loser. It was just one of the greatest stretch runs in Breeders' Cup history, I think.
There's no doubt.
I mean, back in the day when I was a placing judge at Monmouth Park, I could tell you that, you know, those lines are calibrated. It's hard sometimes when you would separate it as a placing judge, and then you would put the photo up, and it would go on the TVs, and it would distort just a little bit from there. I remember we had that the Yankee Affair and Double Booked hit the wire together. This is going back 1,000 years again when I was in the placing the judge's stand. And when we put the photo up, Double Book just beat Yankee Affair, and owners and the trainer came running up to the placing judge, and we were like, here's the photo. I mean, this isn't like magic here. There's the line, and it'll distort just a little bit. So believe me, I was on that side. I've been on the side of ripping up a ticket and getting so pissed off at the world that I didn't think it was a dead, you know, should have been a dead heater or it should have got the nod.
No, I've never argued the photo finish. I mean, you have to trust something, and that's what it was. You know? The thing that interested me so much was how Gary Stevens waved a stick at the wire that he won when it's that close.
They seem to know, but that close. That close, you wouldn't.
But you know, he even said, you know, he was kind of holding his breath. I think
that's funny.
But anyway,
who you bring that race up? Who among the horses that you were personally involved in? Who's your favorite, and who? What race? What spot over the years? And it, you know, it doesn't have to be a Hall of Famer. It can be rank and file horse.
It's not. It's Midnight Luke.
Oh, how about that?
His Breeders' Cup at Monmouth Park.
It's unbelievable. He was hopelessly beaten. No way he's winning.
People don't realize he still holds the record for the biggest margin of victory in a sprint and the fastest time in the sprint. And not only that race, you look at his sprint race at Santa Anita. You know, he was last. He must have been 7 wide coming out of that turn, going 3/4 of a mile. And he went 107 flat.
He leaped. I mean, he just would eat up ground. And at Monmouth, it was a sea of slop. And to make up the ground he made up, it was just unbelievable.
And that's when he won by the biggest margin in Breeders' Cup history.
Unbelievable. It seemed impossible.
That I've lost a lot of races over my life, and I may be a little prejudiced, but that was impressive. And the fact that he had 3 tie-back surgeries, too.
One of the most interesting over the years. I mean, all the conversations we've had with Bob Baffert, and I forget it was well after Breeders' Cup, and I asked him. Where was it? It was at University of Arizona when he did that thing with Todd with the graduates, the back and forth, and we were talking about the same kind of thing about favorite races, favorite horses, and then when he went on with it about Midnight Lude, he said one of the, I think I may have asked him what his greatest regret was about a horse that didn't get to do what, you know, had they had the chance. And the horse that he talked about, rather than some horse that got hurt, you know, as a 2-year-old, New Year's Day or Corniche, he said that Midnight Lute had the throat issue and the breathing. He said, because if he hadn't had that, he said he would have been unbelievable. People think of him as just
going around the ground.
He said he would have been unbelievable going 2 turns.
Oh, I agree with that, because he was not a sprinter. He didn't look like a sprinter. He wasn't bred to be a sprinter. But those great horses can do anything.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, but back to Songbird, I think, you know, her Breeders' Cup race obviously was, I think her best race, or second to that anyway, was the Cotillion. Because in the Cotillion, she had the best 3-year-old field. Of course, she didn't dodge anybody, and she ran everywhere. But that race, I thought, you know, with the Oaks winner in there and some other horses, and she just galloped. That I think that was
well, and Catherine Sophia was on her home track.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, John.
I
mean,
she
had
she
her
may not have been in her best, but regardless, that was impressive.
Wins off by half a dozen.
Yeah. So,
who? I'll ask you that question then. Who do people not know about that might have had an exceptional career?
You know, I would say Kentuckian.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember Kentuckian or not.
Fox Hill. Yeah.
Fox Hill. Oh,
yeah.
He was by Tisnow. He's a half to McLean's Music. And Jerry Hollendorfer trained him.
Sure, of course.
He won his first race, actually ran his first race at Golden Gate. But he won by 11 and went 108 and change. And then he ran second. It's a mistake. And then Jerry said, I don't know how he ever got beat. But the third start of his career, Mike Smith rode him in the grade three there. I forget the name of the race. But he went 7/8 a mile, I think, in 20-4. He won by 6 or 7 under a hand ride. And just he was just a gorgeous animal. The next race, I think, he ran in the LaSalle Derby. And he had throat issues and was paralyzed, you know, throat. And he never got a chance to. But he... His couple races there were just jaw-dropping. They really were.
I remember.
And another one, I think, was Rockport Harbor. Rockport Harbor is undefeated as a two-year-old. He won the Remsen. A lot of people don't realize, but in the Remsen, and going into the first turn, a horse ran up behind him and grabbed his quarter in his back foot and took the whole quarter off. It was really ugly. In the winner's circle, there was just a pool of blood there, and, you know, he still won. But he never fully recovered from that because it was a pretty serious thing when he took that chunk off his foot. And but he was undefeated then. He was probably – he had to be one of the favorites for the Derby at that point, you know.
So, sure.
Yeah. So – but there's a lot of stories like that out there with people that have horses that didn't reach their full potential and so on. And a lot of them probably ones that never made the races maybe. But
no doubt.
But, yeah, you know, I Rick and I had – we had such a great rapport and that he never – you know, he just let me do my job knowing that most of the horses don't turn out. And not one time did he say, hey, why'd you buy this horse? You can't run, which we have a number of them behind the barn that couldn't run, you know. But he was just – he knew the game and he knew
– on that front, in fact, and one of the follow-up questions I wanted to ask, Tom McGreevy's with us, which is always a treat. What lessons can you suggest for prospective buyers, people that want to be owners in the game? I know I've asked you this before in other visits, but what is the best advice that you can give them about approaching the sport? And of course, it's a moving target. But one of the things that Rick Porter did with you and Gary West has done successfully had a sort of a range of price, you know, 250 to 400, which was about Rick's market.
Yeah, I think
range.
Over the years, I'd say we averaged 325.
Yeah,
something like that.
In terms of the approach and under the changing landscape that we have, it seems like it's a much more competitive marketplace these days than it was even, you know, 5, 8, 10 years ago. What do you suggest the approach should be for new prospective buyers?
Get the right people to work for you.
How do they find them? How do you make that?
You know, that's a good question. You just need to do your research and I don't know, talk to the right people, the sales company that you respect that can give you a lead on somebody. And when you do find somebody that you're happy with and you can trust, let them do their job. Don't listen to 10 other people or all this other stuff. And let them do their job. I always agree, if you hire somebody to do the job, let them do it. And if they can't do it, find somebody else that can. But so many people get out there and hear a whisper, well, this is the best horse in the sale, or you need to look at this horse, or whatever. Mm. And I'm not saying you can't learn stuff from everybody, you can, but when it comes time to make up your mind, listen to one person and go with it. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you're going to have to find somebody else. But
it's too many... you know, cooks in the kitchen mentality, really, where you start spinning your head, hearing things from different people, or worse, that you're asking other opinions. right? So if you go into the dance with somebody, go to the dance, and like Tom said, you believe in what they suggest and go with them.
It's always greener on the other side. You know, everybody's got the nobody. The biggest thing about this, nobody has the answer, you know, and so you have to trust somebody and let them do their job, and you know, to go with it.
It's, you know, this game is no different than, say, even baseball, right? A batting average. If you bat 300, you're 3 for 10, you're 30%, you have a good shot of making the Hall of Fame. I mean, you're a star for sure. So, again, you know, you look at trainer stats, you look at jockey stats, you look at, agents that buy horses. If you're buying in that 30% success rate, you know, You're a stud. You're somebody like that. So I mean,
And I think people that first get in the business, and I've seen a lot of times they come in and they think money's the answer. You need money to play, but that's not the number one answer. And Rick was great about it. I think that's why he's successful as a businessman. He believed in surrounding himself with the right people and letting them do their job. So I think that's the number one thing.
It's funny how many prominent owners around the game or in the car business.
Yeah.
And it's not an accident. It's not an accident about
I don't want to say horse trading.
Nick Alexander, Steve Landers, the late Billy Fusillo. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Chapman.
Yeah. Yep. But he loved that. He loved the game. But, you know, Rick, unlike a lot of the other, he would sell, as you know.
Yeah.
And to keep the business going. And
well, then you have to treat it as a business, right?
Not
as a hobby. Understood. Not as a hobby where you have some success and all of a sudden it's like you're not going to sell it. And then you go into the breeding business. Then you keep going down the road, and that might not be the right direction. So having a game plan.
Well, that was my next question, really, is setting goals and understanding what you're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. You know, do you want to just try to have some fun and get in the winner's circle and, you know, that thing, or like Rick, he wanted to, they weren't great at stakes. He wanted great at stakes horses, which most people don't realize. I don't have the exact stats, but I think out of the general population of the thoroughbreds, I think percentage of greatest stakes winners is like 0.6% or something. But you know, you look at Rick, and I mean, he sold Haverty Grace for $10 million, Round Pond for 9.5. He sold, Songbird. He sold Round Pond for 5.7. He sold Joy for Victory for 2. You know, and that covers up a lot of sins.
Yep.
And so, and he did get it going, but so. You know, it's. I think you need the owner coming in. He needs to find somebody that measures with him too, maybe even personality-wise. You know, about looking at horses or, you know, what they want to spend or whatever. But I'm repeating myself. But too many people get in the business and they listen to 10 different people, and 10 different people have 10 different opinions. And I'm not saying they're not right or wrong, but you can't do that. And that's like when all the years I've been looking at horses, I look by myself. I don't have any short list people. Not that they're not really good out there, but I just look at, like, if I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going to make my own mistake, which I do make enough times. And especially when you go to Keeneland, it's difficult not to miss horses. I don't care if you have a big team or just me or whatever, but the way I do it, I've been doing it that way for 35 years, and I'm comfortable with it, and so that's how I approach it.
I got three different follow-ups to this that are all germane and important. One is, you know, one part of the equation we did not include is a veterinary advisor in terms of looking at. At the repository, and seeing flaws that, you know, that might get you a horse at a discount. And I mean, we've heard this story 1,000 times about a fleck at a knee or an ankle, and you know, 7 vets said that's a problem, and the 8th vet said that's not going to bother him. And you know,
I think you have to have a vet you trust, and go with what he says. And but if you, when I looked at it, and Rick and I, if we have a horse we really loved and somebody was on the borderline with the vetting, we would get a second opinion. It's like if you're going to a doctor for whatever. Second opinion never hurts anything.
What is a physical flaw that would absolutely, for you, turn you away from...
Short neck.
Short neck.
Because they don't go two turns.
Whether it's a physical, well, and that's part of my next, that's fabulous that you said that, because I was going to ask you, in the decades of watching and looking at young horses at weanling, yearling, two-year-old and adult levels, do you notice any change in the breed at all? Is there anything that you see morphing or
I think the maybe the biggest change is too many horses are hothoused. They're not allowed to be a horse. I think that's one of the biggest issues about horses not running as much as they used to. I mean, in the old days, say old days, I'm old too, but you know, the big breeders out there, they would have these babies and they'd wean them and they'd just be out in
fields,
40 or 50
romping around.
Yeah, bumping each other. And not only physically, but mentally too. They beat up on each other and they need that as well to mature. So I think that's, and of course now a lot of horses are prepped for weanlings and then are re-prepped for two-year-olds. I mean, yearlings,
two-year-olds. Yep.
So I don't think they get a chance to be a horse as much.
Well, that's an interesting answer. I mean, in terms of toughening them up and once they, you know, getting them in to get started, just having them already, you know, having a certain degree of
well, I think if
toughness.
You look at, yeah, if you look, they were out there running around up in the hills and
right,
know, twisting and turning, building up bone, building up their suspensories and tendons, and you know, they weren't made to stand in a stall. They were made to move.
They're herd animals, right?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be
outside. They're herd. If they're out there, they're grazing all the time, moving. So, and I know the economics of it and stuff is more difficult to do it these days, probably. But I think that's one of the reasons that horses don't run as much as they used to.
That's a fascinating answer and something that we could certainly.
It's interesting because I was showing this to Jimmy the other day, and I trained horses at Penn National back in the early '80s. I was there for a number of years. And I pull up a horse, you can pull him up there. Pull up Troy Knight.
Troy Knight?
K-N-I-G-H-T. And just look at his stats. I'll let you pull it up and you can read it. You can read it off of there.
He only started 235 times.
Right.
And 38 wins, 45 seconds, 28 thirds for 143,000.
But he ran 235. I had claiming horses up there at Pinellas. He was in my barn for maybe a year. So that's pretty amazing.
Oh, and that is funny.
Yeah.
That is a
but
riot.
Back in those days, he said only 109. Jimmy and I were talking about too. He was at Penn National probably the same time I was,
yep.
And that was say 1980. I would say the bottom claiming was $2,000 at Penn National, and if it was a condition $2,000 race, the total purse was $1,700. Not that was the total purse.
So, not the winner's share.
So
that's
say
for sure.
Only 191,000, but.
His best year was 1982. Basically, he started every 2 weeks. He trotted out average 24. Here's his start numbers. 12, 16, 24. This is annual. 23, 27, 35 starts in 1980. 27, 24, 19, 12, 14. When did you have him?
I would say it was in the early 80s, so it had to be somewhere between 81 and 83.
Unbelievable.
I'm not sure.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, too, and I'm not a trainer, and I haven't trained for a long time, and training was not my forte, I'll say that. So I just don't think they run as much as they used to because they don't run as much as they used to. There's so many...
There's statistics, there's win percentage, there's, you know, I think the advent of the sheets and bouncing and giving them 6 weeks to recover, you know, and at some point being an owner too, and you're like, oh, okay, that's great. We ran a 4 on the sheets, and now we can't run for 10 weeks.
Yeah,
sometimes it's like, okay, you know, how'd they come out? They eating right? They doing well? We don't necessarily need to win every time.
My first job at the racetrack was walking hoss for Frank Whiteley. And unfortunately, I was young and stupid and didn't pay a whole lot of attention. But I know one of his philosophy was, when they're doing good, run them. When they're not, don't.
Yeah. Aren't we at cross purposes? And obviously, you don't have to deal with this as much as frontline trainers. But, I mean, let's use Jerry Hollendorfer as an example. Essentially persecuted for, you know, for running horses, you know, with
more often, right?
Not just more, yeah. I mean, with a certain approach that, you know, that is the one that he knows best.
Well, let me just interject here 1 second. You know, when they kicked him out of Santa Anita, I forgot what year that was. But anyway, we had horses with him at the time
with Rick.
No, Rick with. Mike Stinson.
Okay, yeah, Texas. Yeah, that's right. That's
so anyway, people don't realize, right. But the year before that, Jerry did, I don't have that factual thing in front of me, but I was told and by a reliable source, and Jerry, he did not have one horse breakdown that whole year at Santa Anita in afternoons or mornings. It was just, you know, the track was bad that year. People would attest to that. The track was not good that year, and it's an ebb and flow, and sometimes you have bad luck, you know. But Jerry was a great person. He's just a really, really good guy. You know, he cares about his horses and cares about his health. He's a generally good person.
It's a very difficult equation where you've got people saying, oh, the horses don't run as often, and of course it's a fight to fill races. We've got essentially. You know, competition for horses, obviously, but you got racetracks that are running 3 days a week, prominent racetracks, A racetracks, running carding eight races, you know, as a card for
with a few
day.
Sixes in there.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not a trainer. I'm sure they're facing problems that I don't know, and so I'm not throwing them under the bus at all. But I remember another horse that really came to mind was Conquistador Cielo. I don't remember that, but he won the Met Mile on Monday,
and then he won the Belmont
on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you did that now, they would prosecute you.
Well, and that's another portion of this. What's your take? And again, you're not on the front line as in the same way, but the situation where we've got regulatory veterinarians making calls on for people, you know, in some cases that are. We've got veterinarians that aren't racetrack practitioners, never practiced on racehorses in competition. And they're making determinations about whether somebody can run.
You know, I'm not qualified to answer that question, I think. And I'm not going to, you know, I try to stay in my lane. And I'm just not qualified to answer that question, I don't think. You know, the guys that train and stuff like that, they have a lot better handle on that than I do, and I don't. Pretend to know what they know. So.
All right, fair enough. And then, you know, the third, I said there were 3 follow-ups that you made me think of as part of having a successful relationship and building a successful operation. One thing that I've noticed, there's the learning curve of the new owner that wants to come in the game, and they start to have success. The success came when they didn't know anything, and now they suddenly think they know something, and the success was somehow distilled from their, you know, from their understanding. It was distilled from their understanding that to let the team do their job. Now suddenly they start to interfere, and it absolutely spins out of control.
Well, you know, I've been very lucky there. Rick was never like that.
No, I never got that sense.
He wasn't.
He was also a guy that didn't that lose that that could lose gracefully.
He was never one to throw a tantrum, or, you know, because he goes in with a mentality knowing that that's racing and you're going to get beat, and that's why they run the race. I've never seen him, you know, he'd be disappointed, but I've never seen him upset about, you know.
Been with Bobby for a while, win, lose, or draw, we know we're always going to have a good meal afterwards.
Or before.
Before, after, during, whatever the case may be. But yet you, again, you have a lot of people that are coming in that have been very successful in their own businesses, in their own lane, and they think that because they've been successful in one thing, it's going to just automatically be in everything. And whether you're micromanager, yep. Yep. And get in there, and all of a sudden, the last thing that anyone that really understands it would be, for me, this past week has been great. Tom's allowing me to look at horses with him, and it's kind of like going to a master class. And, you know, and I'll say my opinions, and we'll kind of have a discussion on it, but I'm following the lead, and I'm just trying to learn. And the one thing that you just have to let the people you trust, and it's kind of reiterating what you said in the beginning, let them do their jobs. Like, I might have an opinion, and it's like, okay, well, and I'll share it with Tom, and then he'll say, look, I understand that point too, but there isn't that one magic box that needs to be checked. He mentioned the neck, but it, you know, like one of the things that he looks for based on that one question. But it's a culmination of, you know, certain criteria overall.
Oh yeah, I think too many people go in and look at the horse world. They don't have this one piece of the puzzle. It's not going to work. Which I don't agree with that. You know, these. The first thing is they got to be an athlete, and then you decide what you're going to live with. And I think so many people get too carried away about the little the imperfections of a horse. They turn in or they turn out or they're offset. You know, how do they walk through it, and are they an athlete? If they're an athlete, hey, you know.
There was a horse we were looking at. I'm like, oh, this horse is really long in the back. He goes, what does that mean? What, you know, or the horse is, you know, straight in the knee. What does that mean? Because when you're taking it out and looking at the whole, it's the athlete. So what could you live with, what can't? But it was always, that was the question that he would always say, Jimmy, what does that mean? Why do, yes, I agree that the back might be a little longer, but what does that mean? Do you think he's or she's an athlete? And
The thing is, the little imperfections are so easy to see, like a turn in or a turn out. And I think, I look at the whole horse first and then to see what you can live with.
There's a handful of interesting discussions to have out of that. One is the horse adjusts. The carrying on over Vekoma's paddling with the you know, and a horse with the string halt. Who was it that had the, was it not, but was it Bolt, not Boltoro? Who was it? Right? They have the ability to adjust, and there's physical adjustments that the team can make, including a farrier that can work on hooves and adjust the way a horse is shod to help keep the balance. It's all about balance, right? That's all that matters is how the horse stays in balance and as little wasted motion as possible, as efficient as they can move.
Well, I think the horses that are sprinters have a lot better chance of not being the perfect movers. Because when you start going two turns, you better have a lot more efficiency than you do
waste sprinting. Not waste energy.
Yeah, because you can sprint and, you know, have a lot of imperfections in your movement. But I believe in two turns. Most of those good two-turn horses, there are exceptions. I mean, I think of Skip Away. You know, he wasn't
high knee action,
Skippy,
jamming away.
Skippy!
But there are exceptions.
Worked every 5 days, whether he needed to or not.
But he wasn't the prettiest thing to watch, obviously. But I think you just have to generalize, and there's no exceptions to every rules, but I think most of those two-turn horses are a lot more efficient than some of the sprinters.
Which leads to the flip side of what you can't live with, and we know it's a short neck, but what can you live with?
I think the toughest thing to find at the sale is a great walk. And I don't mean just the correct walk. I mean that athletic walk. And I kind of relate it to, okay, if I'm walking down the street and Michael Jordan's walking next to me, there's a difference in how we move, you know. So it's more than just being correct movers. It's being the athletic movers, that all the parts move together in this fluid motion. And another thing that I don't think enough people pay attention to is the intangibles, and that is mainly mentally, how they handle the pressure. Any good horse I bought shows really well. They figure everything out real quick. That this environment, it's the first time I've seen it, but I figured it out. It's not a big deal. And some of those horses never figure it out. So, but most of the good horses, you go to the paddock and most of those grade one races, those horses walk in there like, hey, I own this place. You know, this is what I got, what you got.
Yeah. And you just heard from Aaron, who is
oh, you did?
Yeah, who's enjoying it. And he says, I've got his two favorite people in the game on, and Aaron loves everybody, so that's a high compliment.
Hello, Aaron. Wish you were here.
I told him that yesterday driving in. It was maybe two sales ago, three sales ago, give or take, and Aaron and he allowed me to tag along, and you showed me we videotaped a walk. And you know, when people see, you know, you and other evaluators explain the head on, you know, when they're coming toward you and when they're going away from you, what are we seeing in those videos and live that reflects positively?
Well, you do want a horse that moves correct. You don't want one that paddles. I mean, these are pretty standard stuff.
So their legs, but yeah. I mean, they're gonna. Do they? How much swinging of the leg, as opposed to going, you know, like a cow? I mean, a cow doesn't have flexible knees. They can only go forward.
You know, a lot of that stuff is really difficult to put in words.
Right.
You know, you kind of have to see it, and I say, hey, this is really a great walk, and you just kind of picture that and, you know, go from there. And I want to make one statement. I don't know everything. I've made a lot of mistakes about a lot of bad horses, and there's a lot of great people out there that buy horses, so I don't want to.
Well, but I just, you know.
A good walk just to kind of stay on the back end of it, of the conversation, was maybe with an imperfection. How well did they handle that imperfection, right? The little winging, the little, I mean, it's the athlete, and it's hard to describe it.
Yeah, Maverick, I think towing in, I'd much rather see a horse toe in than turn out.
Turn out.
They handle a lot better. Like, you do, a lot of the great athletes toe in.
And for those that are curious, you know, it's exactly what it sounds like. The hooves are pointing outward a little bit, or pointing inward a little bit. And when they're, particularly when they're outward, it puts stress on the offset limb when they run.
I'm not so much about the stress, it's just how much wasted action they have.
Yeah, that too. There you go.
Yeah, so
they wing in versus out with its toes, typically. So.
And a mare will, mares will pass that on, correct? That confirmation.
You know what? Somebody else have to answer that question. I just look what's in front of me and, you know, go from there. So,
well, you haven't made too many. You know, your record of success.
Well, I tell you what, you have to stay humble in this business, because it will humble you in a hurry. So,
well,
every sale I go to, you know, just because you point a horse or whatever doesn't make a good horse. You have to go out there and do your work, and I go look at two or three times, and I walk by the stall and see how they're handling the pressure in the stall, whether they're walking or eating or, you know, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of
that you learn from Frank Whiteley, right? About watching them in the stall at night, and if they're relaxed, and if they sleep, if they lay down.
Well, you know, at Keeneland, that's what any sale. I don't have Shirley, so I have to have a way to do it. So I just walk and look in the stalls, and you know, I may find. And I came in and say book three or four, I may, in that 40-stall barn, I may find five horses I bring out and look at. So you have to be able to, you know, evaluate your time and use it to your best ability.
No, and when because
looking at a lot of bad horses is a waste of time. So at least this way, I get to see every horse and make a decision whether I want to bring them out or not.
We're gonna get Ned Toffee to come say hello.
No good.
McGreevy, as always. I'm gonna carve that out.
You got me here a lot longer than I expected.
You always are no, and then I get you going and you're fabulous. Yeah. And this is a clip and save for people.
And I'm going to get up right now for a little bit because Tom and I need to do some walking around.
Walk around. Jimmy Ventura, everybody, and Tom McGreevy.
All right,
outstanding start. Thanks so much. We're going to take our first break of the morning, probably our only break of the morning. And I think we got Richard Kent, I see, standing there. And here's Ned Toffee with Brad Cox. And everybody pretty much is here getting ready for the start of the two-year-old in training sale season. It starts in an hour and 10 minutes. Goes for 3 days here, then back in April, then back in June, and of course in May, Timonium with Fasig Tipton and more. Let's step away. Case, not music. Just give us a quick out and we'll come right back because I think Ned Toffee's ready for us. So we'll come back with Ned Toffee. Warren Gash is going to join us from Blood Horse as well. Stay with us. We're at OBS. We'll be here all week, actually, and then on to Gulfstream. But right now, it's a sale focus. Plus, we got some weekend action to recap as well. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.